In mid-March, a meningitis outbreak was reported at the University of Kent involving the meningitis B strain. Since then, a huge amount of information and misinformation has been circulating on social media, leaving many people feeling anxious about any risk. To help us separate fact from fear and better understand the symptoms and the risks and any necessary protections, I'm joined now by Irish GP Dr. Gareth Patterson. Dr. Patterson, thank you so much for joining me on the show. To start off with the basics, what exactly is meningitis and why can it be so serious for people?
Yeah, great question. So meningitis is a bacterial infection. And the reason why it can be so severe is because it's able to cross into and infect part of the brain called the meninges. And as a result of that, it can have very severe consequences and in fact can be life-threatening. So very important to identify and very important to treat.
We've been hearing a lot specifically about meningitis B at the minute with that outbreak at the University of Kent. How does that differ from other strains and types of meningitis?
So there are a number of different types. So there's B, A, C, W, Y. So there's lots of different strains of meningitis. Meningitis B is, each of them can be as severe as the other. What's different with meningitis B is that whereby ACWY are part of the vaccination program for teenagers, meningitis B isn't. And so although the consequence of meningitis can be the same, I suppose how they are approached from a public health perspective is slightly different.
Because we haven't been, you know, vaccinated against this particular strain for sure. Obviously, some of the symptoms, as people will generally know with meningitis, they can resemble a lot of common illnesses depending on severity. Of course, what should people be watching out for and when should they become concerned?
Yeah, really good question. I mean, that can be the problem with meningitis. At its onset and with the initial presentation, it can appear like any sort of flu-like or viral illness. So symptoms like headache, fever, vomiting and muscle pains, which of course all of us have probably experienced when we've had different viruses or the flu. What's different is that it can then progress into more severe symptoms at a later stage in the disease process, and those sort of symptoms which we want to be particularly concerned about would be the symptoms where at the point that the meninges become affected, that lining around the brain. And so those would be the classical symptoms that I'm sure people are very aware of: the neck stiffness, the sensitivity to light, and of course the later onset symptom of the non-blanching rash, which comes on at a later time of the infection process and is very severe. So what I would say to anybody is that although those initial symptoms can present like any other type of flu or viral type illness, it's important to bear in mind what's going on in the community around. So of course, if anybody has been in close contact with somebody that they would be worried may have contracted meningitis or is in an area where there's a higher rate of meningitis at a certain time, any sort of symptoms that resemble a bacterial or flu-like illness, they should always get seen.
How can one actually contract meningitis? How is it like passed on?
So it's passed on through droplet form. So that's essentially somebody breathing on you closely, sneezing, coughing. And so it's important to remember that meningitis, you know, it's unlikely that you'll pass someone in the street and pick up meningitis. Meningitis is spread through close contacts. So that would be living in close quarters with somebody, so our household or university halls. And if you've been at a social event, you've been in close proximity to someone for a prolonged period of time. So it's not typically passed. For example, you can't pick it up from a surface necessarily. It's passed through that droplet form from human to human.
And of course, with that outbreak in the UK that we've been talking about for the last number of days, how likely is it that we could see something similar in Ireland, in your view?
Certainly, it's certainly possible. What we know at the moment is that there hasn't been any known transmission of cases from the UK to Ireland. Of course, as in any year, there have been cases in Ireland this year, as is the case in the UK. Every year on year, there are a number of cases of meningitis B. What's different here, of course, is that there's been such a high incidence in a small area of the country. And so the likelihood of it of cases moving from the UK to Ireland would of course be if someone travels from the UK having picked it up and goes and travels back to Ireland or travels to Ireland.
So that can be if people that were exposed to it in the first instance, so not necessarily something that we're looking at definitely happening, but something people should be aware of for sure. The MenB vaccine is something that's being offered to students at the moment in the UK. Can you explain how that works and should it be something that we're looking at rolling out as well at the minute in Ireland?
So the Men B vaccine is being offered to students, particularly those who have been in scenarios where they have been in close contact with somebody who's been diagnosed with having meningitis B. Again, as mentioned, close proximity, so household contacts, etc. In those incidences, those individuals will be offered immediate protection through an antibiotic. And then offered the meningitis B vaccine to provide longer term protection. Meningitis B isn't part of national vaccine programs, whereby ACWY strains are part of the national vaccine program. The reason being is that it's not felt that the incidence of meningitis B amongst teenagers and young adults is high enough to warrant it being part of the national program. And it's not felt that a vaccination offers as good a long-term protection as ACWY. So that's why in these cases, it would be immediate rollout in the cases of outbreaks, as opposed to being a part of a national program.
So it'd be kind of in those specific, you know, outbreaks, things like that. If obviously in Ireland, many people received meningitis vaccines in childhood and a booster in their early teens. If somebody is conscious at the minute of this conversation and wants to avail of their booster, if they missed it perhaps when they were a teenager for the strain that you mentioned there, the A1, the one that's not the B1, how can they go about doing that?
So speak to the GP.
That would be the direct point of contact, I imagine, for so many things. As well, people that are older as well, and maybe might be unsure of their protection, is it still possible to get the vaccination as well?
Again, it would all be dependent upon what exposure that they've had and what their vaccination history has been. So though, of course, GPs are dealing with huge volume of work every day, it's still important to prioritise and ensure your own safety and health. So I would all, as a GP myself, would always recommend that anybody who's unsure would just give us a call.
For anyone who might be feeling a bit anxious after seeing all this coverage about meningitis B over in the UK at the minute, what's the most important thing you'd like them to keep in mind?
I think bear in mind that what we're looking at in the UK here is a small number of cases. So it was 20 confirmed cases, sadly, of course, 2 deaths. So we can understand why there has been this panic and concern, but it's a small number of cases which peaked in mid-March, and we know now numbers have stabilised or even starting to drop. So I think just as I would encourage, and we would as clinicians encourage any patient, just being mindful and aware of your body. If you're experiencing symptoms of any type that aren't your normal or what you're used to, you should be liaising with a healthcare professional anyway. And of course, adding on top of that, this recent outbreak, just being more aware of those symptoms of flu-like illness, if there's been any close contacts, and of course, if it develops into those later onset symptoms, seeking immediate help.
Dr. Gareth Patterson, thank you so much for joining me on iRadio's Group Chat.
Thank you so much.